Welcome to today's County Roads Bobblers podcast. It's actually the first of this season. I'd love to come here at happier times, but actually, we're on the back of a third straight defeat, which was obviously the one they lost to Wolves at the weekend at Goodison Park. It's myself, Witch. I'm joined by good friends of ours, Matt Barry, and also View from Bulls lead, Matt. I think this is your debut, Lee, as well, isn't it? On the Bobblers podcast, I think, officially.
Yeah, I think it is. I've been on a space. I was definitely on a space. I remember that one. But in terms of a pod, mate, yeah, it is, yeah. So, yeah, mate. Yeah.
So, welcome. And there's lots to discuss. Obviously, it's been a bit of a turbulent season. There's plenty of positives that have obviously surfaced, certainly in the last week. But let's start having a bit of a discussion around what's gone on so far this season. So I'm going to really start with obviously, we haven't talked about any of the games so far, but I'm going to concentrate obviously on the last one, which was obviously Wolves at home. Matt, I'm going to start with yourself. Selection-wise, I think there was a general consensus that the actual selection had improved the last game in terms of what Deitch picked. Was that something that you felt as soon as you seen that lineup at the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there was a bit of trepidation after the Villa game that, you know, come 2 o'clock last Saturday and when the team sheet was going to be announced, whether, you know, certain individuals were going to be on the team sheet or, you know, whether Deitch would move away from, you know, his perceived stubbornness and try and get a bit of a attacking intent into the side and, you know, and bring Jared Branthwaite in, you know, finally. And he did it. It was really pleasing to see, you know, and it was nice to see that there was going to be a bit of pace in the forward line. Certainly, you know, giving Dan Juma in from bringing Dan Juma in from the start and also Dobbin as well, you know, who looked one of our better players against Villa when he came on. And you know, it was good to see Deitch be able to be a bit flexible. I think that's probably one of the criticisms from the first two games of the season where, you know, he was a bit reticent to make changes. So, you know, 2 o'clock when the team sheet came out, it was good to see that, you know, he can make positive changes.
Thanks, Matt. Lee, obviously, talking about what Matt just kind of picked up on was obviously Branthwaite coming in. I mean, I don't want to delve too much into to you know, the kind of Michael Keane thing because I don't want to stick someone else, you know, on the line. But, you know, I think we've seen enough articles this week and the last few weeks and probably the back end of last season to suggest that actually that Michael Keane has been underperforming this Everton defence. Obviously, a lot of people, I know that yourself was a big advocate of bringing Branthwaite into that side after a successful period at PSV. Were you pleased to see him make that change? And did it reinforce your opinion maybe that he should probably start the season or you know, what's your kind of overarching feeling on that?
Mate, I was delighted when I seen the team news. I thought it was overdue. And I just want to point out, I think with any player, it's never personal. You know, I think we all want Everton to cross over the line to do well. And, you know, if it's a personal choice, you've got your support and that's good. But I think with Michael Keane, you know, the stats back it up. You know, and we all go every game and you're watching him and there's games where he'll look okay and we're in a low block and he looks fairly solid and he'll throw a worldie of a performance in every now and again, maybe 1 in 7, 1 in 8. But you know, unfortunately with Michael Keane, that you're only ever sort of a game or two away from a complete disaster and a mistake that's likely to lead to a goal or a penalty or occasions where he completely switches off. And it's happened far too often over such a long period of time that Everton fans just want something different. And I think back to the Fulham game and an hour before kickoff there, and you see his, and not just him, but a couple of other names on the team sheet, and the overriding feeling that you get, and I'm only speaking for myself, of course, is like, this is a bit stale, this. You know, we need to change something up and do something a little bit different, because predominantly the last couple of years' results has just been shocking. We've had to endure poor performances, and there's individuals that are more accountable for that than others. So, I mean, Jared Branthwaite, you look at him, I think I've seen a lot of comments online over the summer where, had we have bought him directly from PSV, a young 22-year-old strapping centre-back who's just won, you know, I don't know if he won Player of the Year or whatever, but he's just won a cup. He had a really successful season with PSV. Then there wouldn't even have been a debate whether he'd be starting the season if fit. But I think for some reason, because he's coming back from a loan spell, there was a little bit of trepidation on Dyche's part to throw him in. But I think it was a couple of games at least overdue. And he did himself absolutely no harm with that performance. I thought he was really commanding, comfortable on the ball, very composed. He's certainly not a player that you can imagine is going to get bullied week on week by defenders. He can hold his own. And he just looks a presence in that back line. You know, and he's more vocal than Michael Keane as well. So, you know, I for one, I'm certainly hoping that he can nail down that position now. But also be mindful that you said something which earlier on, which I thought was really, really good point, that he's going to make a mistake. You know, he is young, and footballers in general, you know, he'll make a mistake, but we have to be rational and sensible about it and maybe afford him one or two across the space of a season, because we've done the same with Michael Keane and others, you know, for a much longer period than that. So it can't just be a case of he puts one foot wrong and we all jump on him and we want him out the side again. We've got to be patient and let himself adapt and adjust to this side. But it was a great start for him, arguably man of the match. And I think he's a shoo-in for the next Premier League game anyway.
Definitely, mate. I couldn't agree anymore. And I think it's got to get to a point, isn't it? You've got to look at what you've got. And let's be honest, I was looking at, you know, the disparity in terms of spending this summer. And it's stark. You know, the actual, you know, the ability for some of the Sky Six sides to be able to spend 200-300 million. And I'm not sat here, you know, claiming to be innocent here. Everton have spent money and they've wasted it at times. But Everton have got to look for ways to get, you know, more out of what they've actually got. So in Jared Branthwaite, you've got, you know, a lad that probably is one of the biggest assets in the squad. You look at Mark Gahey, obviously at Palace. He was brought in at the same age as Jared Branthwaite, you know, little unknown quantity in the Premier League, and they gave him 2 years. You know, and you're talking Chelsea and City and you know, likes of Liverpool looking at him. Obviously, Levi Colwill, obviously at Chelsea as well. Again, you know, a player, we're talking 50, 60 million now, he's had a full Premier League season. Mm-hmm. So you've got to step back and look at the full picture. And I agree what you've just said, Lee, and we kind of talked about this off air, is that, yeah, he will make mistakes. You know, lo and behold, people do make mistakes on a football field. But yet we've seen other players make mistakes, and they've been here for many, many more years, more under different managers and different regimes. And well, we can actually say failed regimes. So I think it's about time now that we give this lad some breathing space. And it's not double standards, I don't think. I don't think, you know, we're not saying, like, you know, we'll jump on a mistake from Michael Keane, but we'll ignore the one from Branthwaite. But actually, it's the bigger picture. You know, this player could be worth £60 million, £70 million to this football club in a few years' time. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? You know, if you've got a brand new car outside, what do you do? Put up the garage, you know, and hope that it'll be all right in 2 years' time. No, you don't. You know, you show it off, wouldn't get it. You know, you can't really do the best you can with that car. You wouldn't be driving the clapped out one day outside the thing and expecting different results and this to be your kind of Rolls Royce all of a sudden. I think it's about time that we start looking at things differently at this football club, and to be different, we've got to do things differently. We can't just keep doing the same things and expecting different results. And that's exactly as you said, Lee. We can't keep going with the same people and all of a sudden expecting, you know, miracles. Jared Branthwaite has gone away. If we're really serious about giving a pathway to players, bringing in James Vaughan and allowing him to pick the moves. Actually, he's gone, you know, and done all that he could do at PSV. So what message does it send if you don't then play him? You know, other players will be looking and saying, well, you know, if Branthwaite's gone and won a cup, scored loads of goals and done really well at PSV, and, you know...
Yeah, what's the point of me going out on loan?
Yeah, what's the team? What's the point? You know, I'm not going to get a gap. So, you know, if you can't give a go to him, then what's the point? So, yeah, no, I totally agree. And it you know, I was sat next to a few lads from the Bobblers there at the weekends, you know, and they were saying Stones all over again. You know, I think he's slightly different than Stones, maybe, but I can see what they were saying. He's got an aura about him, he's got a presence. Can almost see that there's a player there, you know, without even having to think too hard. Matt, I can see you nodding along for those that can't obviously see
Yeah.
the visuals because some of
But
us, Bob, we've got a face for radio, so you don't get to
the
see them. But
key
Matt, do you think the same?
the key with Stones though is that he played. You know,
Yeah.
he was able to develop playing, you know, playing Premier League football. And, you know, he did make the mistake, or he would, you know, try something that was a little bit, you know, exotic at times and a bit, you know, made everybody take a bit of a gasp of air in because, you know, we're not used to seeing things like that. But you know he was extremely elegant on the ball, and you know given the time that he did play and he was able to develop, and he went from a £2 million signing from Barnsley to you know a £50 million sale. So you know you can't keep people like that on the bench. So as you said, they you know they have to have the opportunity to play because you know Michael Keane was getting a game and ahead of him. And this conversation was happening with somebody on Twitter the other day, or X, whatever it's called now. And you know, and you mentioned it off air. Then that it can be a strange place sometimes. But you know, in my opinion, you know, Branthwaite may be unproven a little bit in the Premier League, but he's been playing at a higher level than Michael Keane. He's been playing Champions League football. You know, he's been playing in a side that is used to winning week on week on week on week. PSV. So, you know, from a confidence point of view, from an ability point of view, from, you know, the games that the opposition that he's playing against, you know, he perhaps he's ahead of Keane already. It's just the fact that, you know, as Lee says, if we were signing him from PSV, you know, we'd have the trumpets out saying, you know, what an amazing signing, what a brilliant player. You know, he's got a pedigree.
Definitely.
You know, I think that, as you quite rightly say, we need to start doing things a lot, you know, a bit differently from what we've been used to doing in the past. And, you know, same old, Premier League proven. You know, it doesn't always work. You only got to look at Brighton for that.
And I think you've got to be mindful, which and Matt, I think when you're looking at social media, I think people will always find an angle to dissect comments or opinions and you know whatever and they'll come for you. You know, if those opinions end up looking a bit silly, and we're all guilty of that. We've all said things and we've all gave opinions on players that turn out to be wrong or and that's fine. You know, you should be comfortable with that and able to hold your hands up and be humble about it. But let's be honest, I think you look back to the start of the Mashiri era, it's been appalling. It's been I mean, I'm 40 now, unfortunately, and this is, without question, the worst 3, 4, 5 year period I can recall being an Evertonian. It's been absolutely grim, like really, really grim, to the point that going the match recently has started to become a little bit like a chore. You almost think you know what you're going to expect. I bumped into a fella outside the ground coming out of the game at the weekend, and he made a comment, and it's really stuck with me. He said, "We should all be millionaires. Evertonians, we're all stupid. We should all be millionaires because we're the most predictable side in the division. And the things that you fear are going to happen often happen with Everton. And we've got to get away from this mindset. And I'm sorry that, but I cast my mind back to like certain games, like that Liverpool game in the cup where they fielded their under 11s and beat us 1-0. And I looked at the Everton team and I just thought, we're losers. It's just a team of losers. They find it too easy to lose and just accept it. No matter what the circumstances and how bad the performance is. And I look at that side now and I can't name it off the top of my head, but it's about time we strip this club of as many of those players as completely possible. And I think we've started that, but I'm afraid, you know, Michael Keane and others fall into that category. And for me, I don't care really about comeback. You know, we need to see the back of that era of Everton players who've let us down habitually.
This is
I
really
want new
interesting.
players. I want new players. I want players I can get behind, players that I can trust, players that I know that aren't just going to let me down, throw the towel in and capitulate and things like that. I don't want to associate Everton players with that. I want fresh blood and I want that feeling going to the match again where, yeah, these are 11 lads that are going to get me on the edge of my seat. They may not perform week in, week out. They're going to have off days, but no matter what, they're always going to give absolutely everything, and they're going to bleed blood, sweat and tears for the club that we all love. And I think that's the minimum expectation. So I want all the players who don't tick those boxes bombed out, and I don't think anyone should apologise for that.
See, that's a really interesting point, Ashley, because Dave, we were talking about this the other day about players, you know, hopefully the back of this window now, we're going to see Gbame gone and Gomez gone and Holgate's gone. And, you know, it is the last remnants of, you know, a really dark period of just ridiculous spending of players who, you know, perhaps have joined the club not with, you know, the right intentions. It was just they were offering the biggest wage at the time. And, you know, it was go play in the Premier League. You got great exposure. You can go sit mid-table and earn, you know, 100, 120 grand a week in some certain, you know, some instances. And, you know, we've gone away from the young, hungry, up-and-coming players to, you know, that type of sort of mercenary player, if you like. And it hasn't bred a winning mentality. You're absolutely right. You know, you go back 10, 15 years and you look at the signings we were making, you know, certainly if we always go back to Cahill and Lescott and Jagielka and people like that, you know, but they had longevity at our club. And, you know, when you associate what was the, you know, the better time, I'm not going to say good times, but the better times in the Premier League era, then, you know, it was the team under Moyes with players like that. And, you know, we've, as you quite rightly say, we've gone away from that model by signing, you know, losers and people who haven't had the right mentality and people who perhaps haven't put the club first, whereas players in the past have. And we've ended up in such a bad, bad predicament because of that.
You know, well, just moving on from obviously Braithwaite, obviously, I think, just to coin a phrase, but he gave us 99 reasons why he should be playing and not one why he shouldn't. Just to kind of spin that round a bit. But obviously, one player that I was looking at, and, you know, when we talk about the players that have been overpaid, overhyped and overvalued at times, but a young player that I kind of was pleasantly surprised at was Lewis Dobbin. You know, I kind of, you know, you keep track of the under-23s, don't you? And obviously, most Blues watch some of the loan games, you know, depends on where they go. You know, I know certainly I almost became a Blackpool fan at times watching Sims when he was there. You know, become a Hull fan, expecting Josh Bowler to be playing. I fell across that Jared Bowen that was there at the time, was keeping him out and was hoping that we were signing him. But you'd automatically start sometimes following some of these sides. And obviously, Dobbin went out to Derby last year. So, you know, kind of picked some of that up. I've got to admit, and this is what you talk about getting things wrong, Lee. I didn't really expect too much out of Dobbin. If I'm honest, I thought that he might have been one that we might have let go and a League One side had picked him up. But I've been so pleasantly surprised by him in pre-season. And, you know, it's nice, actually, that a young player is over-exceeding your expectations. And it's not, you know, we've had plenty of them, haven't we? You know, I think that era where we had John Joe Kenny, Kieran Dahl, and all them coming through, and we thought, oh, these lads are going to do it. You know, they've won a, you know, competition with England. But it's nice, actually, for a young lad to come in, work hard, and actually probably earn a place at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Now, I know it's fair to say it's a bit of a raw performance, but yeah. I think at times it's good to see these young lads play because they at least get on the ball, they work hard, they're industrious. And, you know, he didn't really have much support in terms of a centre forward, and that's not on Dan Juma. But, you know, he's not a centre forward, is he? He's really a winger. But, you know, I think I've seen enough in young Lewis Dobbin to think, actually, I've got this one wrong here. Were you the same, mate, or what's your thoughts on Dobbin?
No, I thought he did really well. I agree with you. Certainly, my expectations for him weren't really high. I think it's fair to say it might get a little bit more difficult for him as the weeks progress, just with players coming back, either in through the door, transfer-wise, or back to fitness. It looks like it's, you know, areas that we're going to be quite blessed with options going forward. But yeah, he's done himself no harm again. Same brackets as Braithwaite. I thought he was very committed. He was giving it a go. He was going at his man. He was trying to get to the byline. So he was fearless in that respect. The name of the Wolves right back escapes me, but he was quite a tough opponent.
Samir.
Yeah, Semedo. I think he was a tougher putt. He was quick.
Right
so
back, one of the best, one of the most underrated right backs, I'd say.
He was really good. And there's a few of us round in the lower Gladys saying, you know, he's up against the tough right back there. So it was a tough test, but I think he came out of it really well. He can have it hold his head really, really high. I think he tired towards the end. But like you say, certainly enough signs that, you know, if he's in and around that match day squad and he's getting minutes here and there, he can be a valuable asset to the squad. And especially when we've got more threat and we've got real strikers on the pitch for him, because it always makes players look better. It makes your wingers and your central midfielders look better when you've got someone on the end of it putting the chances away rather than missing it, because you recall the assists and things like that. But no, I think, you know, will he get another opportunity midweek against Doncaster? Who knows? But at squad where, you know, we're thin on the ground, the bench has looked threadbare for a long time. It's nice to see someone come in and make themselves an option. And he's done that all by himself, by hard work and putting in the performances pre-season. So he's got his rewards at the end of it, which is brilliant. And I just think it gives the crowd a bit of a lift as well. Just seeing him on the team sheet rather than like a Neil Maupay, who, again, we're not going to dig him out, but it's just not happening for him at Everton for whatever reason. It's not for the want of trying, but it just doesn't seem to be working for him. And I think the reaction when you see someone different on the team sheet and a youngster given a go, it just gives everybody that bit of a lift. And I think that goes for the players on the pitch as well, you know, keen to see what this lad can do. So, yeah, well played, Lewis Dobner. I thought he did really, really well.
Do you know what, as well as Ali, and it's a great point that you make about keeping him in and around the squad, even when, you know, players do start coming back. But if he does get a bit of game time and he's in and out and, you know, he does impress, even if we sent him out on loan in January and then mm-hmm. he comes back, you know, he's done well in a Premier League season. So you get the Premier League tax on top of that then. So, you know, if we do decide to move him on, in the summer afterwards, then he's got a bit of Premier League experience, and we're getting away from, you know, letting our players go for a pittance. You know, it's an opportunity for us to say, you know, he's got Premier League experience, he's done well, mm-hmm. you know, he's worth a couple of quid, and absolutely. Things that we haven't done in the past, you know, and we've really missed out on.
Absolutely,
I do agree with you as well, Bob. The pair of you, but you know, I'm kind of looking at it, and there has been calls to send them back out on loan. And the temptation is to say, right, this is the best thing for the player, get them out on loan, get them playing. You know, I'm not going to compare him to Phil Foden, but Phil Foden's an example who didn't go out on loan. He was obviously a lot younger, played, you know, obviously training under Guardiola every day. He, rather than send them out on loan, kept them with the squad, the day to day squad, you know. Blooded him in occasionally. Now, obviously, I didn't expect much out of Tottenham at all, so he's pleasantly surprised me. But in the days where actually we've got, we've now got more minutes in a game. Obviously, we heard Varane talking about this the other day, saying that, you know, the expectations, you're playing an extra 10, 12 minutes a game because of the added time. Also, you know, the additional subs, the lack of actually depth for Everton. So I think we've got to look at that and that whole picture and think, well, all right, well, what's best for us, but also what's best for Dobbin? So we can't just concede on either front. So I don't think it would be the end of the world, as you said there, Matt, just to keep until January. You know, if he is playing, obviously, you know, against Doncaster on Wednesday, maybe give him 70 minutes there, you know, and there'll be occasions where you'll need someone to come on. And you know, we've seen enough to say this fella can actually work hard. Can ask a few questions, and he can put a shift in. And let's be honest, we're Everton, aren't we? So we tend to have a few injuries occasionally. So although we've got Harrison, McNeil, and potentially Iwobi, we don't know who's going to leave the club between now and Friday. You know, there's potential we could get two or three injuries, and all of a sudden, you know, we don't want to be in a position where we haven't got an option on the bench. So it's about, it's such a fine balance occasionally about getting that right, you know, making sure that actually you're doing the best for the player, but you're doing the best for the actual team itself, because, you know, if Everton gets strapped short, all of a sudden start losing a few games that, you know, that we maybe could have seen out 3 points or could have seen out a draw and we concede because we haven't got that extra bit of energy. And we've seen that towards the back end of last season, didn't we? you know, where there were games where they just had not left, and you were almost worrying, you know, that let's keep this result as it is, because you can almost see, you know, that if we don't, then the other team can capitalise. So I think it is an interesting one, and I don't think we should always think that a loan's the best thing for a player's development. It's a good thing for a player's development, of course it is, and the right loan. But also, you know, you've got to get that balance of, you know, maybe what's best for the team. You know, could we keep him for 6 months and allow him to work with well, potentially his future manager who he's going to play under? So, yeah, no, it is getting that balance. So Doncaster obviously is upon us. Obviously, by the time this podcast gets released, it'll be a day later. There's always a temptation to rotate, a massive temptation for some Everton managers in the past. You know, we've seen obviously Carlo Ancelotti even totally change the team around, rest the Koundé and players like that, and then he ends up going to extra time and playing nearly 90 minutes already, you know, when he was trying to rest them. So, Lee, how much do you rotate that side against Doncaster, especially after it's lost three games? You know, is it more of a risk actually rotating it heavily and then losing again, or do you actually keep a strong side out?
Yeah, I think we've got to keep a strong side out there. I think you've got to balance it. I think that maybe a couple of changes, but it can't be wholesale because, like you say, you've just alluded to there, you know, on the back of such a disastrous start to the season, maybe not performance-wise, but results-wise, you've got to look at it and it's 3 out of 3 defeats. We've not yet scored a goal. There's a couple of things that we need from Wednesday night at Doncaster. One, we need to be in the half of the next round after the game. Two, we need a performance and something to hold on to. And three, I think we need a couple of goals. You know, I think we need to find the back of the net. So whether, you know, Chimiti comes in and gets a start, maybe. You know, I think he did really well, actually. And he surprised me more than most at the weekend with, you know, his strength and how confident he looked, you know, for his age and his lack of experience at that level. So, you know, does he get a start? But one thing I've always been a really, really... It's been a big bugbear of mine is like changing your goalie and your defence up and things like that. Because, you know, Everton, I've got the worst relationship imaginable with this League Cup. It's just mad that a club of our size and history has never won the competition. We never really seemed to threaten it. There was a couple of years under Moyes and Martinez where we got to semi-finals and stuff. But other than that, it's shocking. You know, so who knows how the season's going to develop? You know, right now, how things look bleak. But there has been positives and things can change quickly. New signings can come in, players can come back from injury and then start embedding. And all of a sudden you click on something, you get on a run of results and you think, if only we were still in the League Cup. And how often have we seen it where we've gone out and the draw opens up and everyone starts getting knocked out? And you're thinking, if we so many reasons why Dyche needs to keep a strongish side. You know, I'm all for maybe protecting a couple of players, you know, but I really don't want to see 6, 7, 8 changes because I think this is it for very different reasons. It's a really, really important game. It's a game we should win, but we have to win it comfortably. And I think the performance is more important than the result.
Totally agree, mate. Totally agree. Matt, just obviously looking at what Lee said there, is that what you're thinking as well? And, you know, what changes, if any, are you making to that side? Obviously, we're still yet to score goals. Is Bimitti a player that you might consider bringing in?
I think so. I think, you know, we need the type of the way that Dyche wants to play. We need a focal point. And, you know, if Calvert-Lewin isn't ready because having his mask fitted, you know, Beto, although he'll be registered, I doubt he's going to get any game time tomorrow. Even if he puts him on the bench. So, you know, Chimiti, I think, as Lee said, you know, he showed enough on the weekend to, you know, to have his full debut. I'd bring Mikalenko back. I think he needs minutes because I think Ashley Young has been poor the last couple of games.
Yeah.
I think Ben Godfrey will probably get a few minutes as well. But what I want to see above anything is James Garner coming into the centre midfield, because, you know, he's he's the only player that we've got in that midfield who can put his foot on the ball and start running a game and start dictating and picking passes, because the midfield three that we've got at the moment just aren't functioning. So Dyche needs to find a way, he needs to find a solution. And, you know, we've got Dobbin and Danjuma now who can play the wings. So there should be absolutely no reason why Garner doesn't come in into the middle. And, you know, that will have a significant impact on Everton playing positively. So I'd like to see that. I know I mentioned a few changes there, but, you know, we also need positive momentum. And if we can get a win on Wednesday night and play well, that takes us into Saturday. And, you know, there's the international break after that then. So there's no reason why, you know, we can't put two strong 11s out Wednesday and Saturday and try and go into the international break on the back of two wins and a really positive window.
Agree, base. I've got to admit, I'm the same as you there. I think, Michael Anko's been much maligned at times, and rightly so. You know, we're not kind of, you know, I'm not going to sit here and protect his performances. You know, at times last season were very average. I've got to say, and I'll put this on record, that I have got question marks over Dyche's tight four at the back. I think teams have targeted it so far. You know, if you've watched Dyche's videos, he talks about protecting the V and all that kind of stuff, and how he wants full backs to actually be within the box. For me, the last couple of games, O'Neill, obviously, I'm not going to levy Villa against him, but O'Neill, and certainly, you know, when we were looking at Silva's performance the first game of the season, they look for the switch straight away. Look to put pressure on our centre, you know, our kind of compact back four. It felt to me at the weekend, and it wasn't the only factor, that they were looking to do that, and they knew that eventually something would give, because how much we drop, how tight that kind of back four was. And I think Ashley Young probably was part of that, but I do question at times, if Michael Enko comes in, would he be any different if he's being asked to do the same thing? I don't know. You know, I'd like to obviously, you know, see some of that get changed. Maybe Michael Enko comes in and we can see it. But I do think Dyche does need to reflect at times on that formation, on what he's asking of his back four. And I don't want to criticise the fellow. Look, he's took on a bit of a shit card, hasn't he? You know, he's stuck on a team that he needs to stay up. But that doesn't mean that you can't call out improvements. And I think it's healthy for Evertonians to question things at times. You know, Everton's press conferences talking about, you know, certain players, you know, if he's persistent with them. Also certain tactics, if he's still insisting on the fullbacks remain so narrow and the teams are targeting and spraying the ball wide, you've got to ask questions, haven't you? So that's a bit of a long way to come back there, Matt. But yeah, I would go also with Mikalenko at left back, just because Young hasn't really worked. I'd probably play Young in midfield, to be honest with you, just because I think we're going to have a lot of possession. I'm going to say something actually, which is contradictory of the weekends, but an open play is crossings a lot better than his corners, because his corners we're absolutely terrible the weekend, to be honest with you. But an open play is crossings a lot better. So maybe that might be an opportunity for him to actually get his foot down the ball. Cannon would be someone I might look at. There's talks of being frustrated because he wants to go somewhere and play football. If they are talking about selling him, I wouldn't. But play him up front maybe, let him score a couple of goals. That's definitely a level that he can exploit. You know, we're struggling for goals. This is hard. He wants to prove himself. You know, if we talk about someone questioned your leadership abilities, Matthew, the other day, and mine, I think in a tweet. But if you were a leader and there's a lad there that's knocking on your door and crazy about, you know, wanting to prove himself, then actually just say to him, go on then, Tom, get in there and, you know, you're playing Doncaster. We'll give you 60 minutes. you know, I've no doubt that the lads are coming there and work his backside off. And I'm sure you'd agree with me at that match as well. So yeah, but I do think it's important to keep the centre back partnership the same. I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't be tempted to bring Godfrey back in. I do think that's important. And, you know, I think we just need to just give Tarkowski and Branthwaite a period of time now, whether that's 50, you know, 15, 20 games, just saying, you're my partnership, you know, and you've got to stick with them no matter what. Like, are you the same, mate, or would you bring Godfrey back in? Or I know Matt suggested bringing him in, and don't want to bring him under the bus here, Matt, but I'm just saying that's my contradictory view on that.
No, I think I'm with you. I mentioned it last time you came to me. I think I'm okay making changes up front, maybe in midfield. I completely agree with Matt in terms of bringing Garner into the middle. We're crying out for that. I think he's our best ball player. But at the back, I just think, yeah, your goalie and your centre backs in this competition, I like, you know, to sort of stick with them. I think it adds to that cohesion, that understanding going into Premier League games, and especially going into Saturday, which before the international break is now taking on massive importance. You know, we don't want the latest in the, you know, the, one of these obvious, predictable horror results where a team's going into a fixture against Everton wanting their first win and no points on the board, and all of a sudden, you know, they take 3 points off us. I'm sick of those things happening. So I think for those reasons, I want to see Branthwaite and Tarkowski, that partnership, sort of gain more understanding. It got off to a decent start. Obviously, I think the goal was disappointing against Wolves, but overall, it was decent, and there's enough signs there. They need to build on that, and then make the changes around them. I just think, for me and me only, it's just your goalie and your centre backs. It's always grated on me making changes in those areas, because I just think it creates, there's more impact there than potentially anywhere else in the pitch in terms of understanding.
Definitely, and just looking forward to Sheffield United as well, because we won't get a chance to do one before that. Obviously, we finally got a centre forward in. Hooray! I think, you know, things can only get better. Someone pointed out before on social media, but this lad looks the business, doesn't he? He's a big, strapping centre forward, 6'4". You know, he's got, saying he's got a great goal record, but he's got a steady goal record. Looks like, you know, he could flourish in the Premier League. Matt, you're excited. We've got this. We've got a centre forward that a lot of fans have been crying out for a long time. If he is confirmed, do you bring him straight in against Sheffield United?
Yes. Yeah. To be honest with you, you know, I think from Sheffield United point of view, you know, obviously they'll be aware of him, but it's that bit of the unknown. You know, from our point of view. Again, just talking about what we're saying about Chimity, you know, he this is exactly the way we want to play football, and it's the way that you join your midfield up, you get your midfield runners running past the centre forward who's holding the ball up, and, you know, as Lee says, that's the type of player who's going to get your wingers involved as well. So, you know, Serie A's, he's probably come up against, you know, some real Alas defenders. You know, he's probably been used to being buffeted around and, you know, the rigors and the physicality of a top league. So, you know, I think we can't afford not to play him, to be quite frank. You know, if Calvert-Lewin's not back, if you can give Chimiti some minutes on Wednesday, maybe, then I think he's got to come in. And, you know, he's going to have the international break then to get some, you know, good training minutes behind him. And, you know, whether he has his own little gaffer day and he gets, you know, Dyche fit over that period of time, we'll see. But, you know, you're paying £26 million for a player. You've got to put him in, I think, as far as I'm concerned. You know, we've been waiting for Romelu Lukaku's replacement, and, you know, all those years later, here he is. So get him in the side.
Agree, mate. I do think, you know, you say the Dyche fit may be something that grates on me a little bit, if I'm honest, and I'm not going to go too much into it, but it is something that grates on me. But we have had a missing component clearly from that side, which is a centre forward. It always does feel like, you know, we've had players maybe filling in there, not really doing the job.
To see if it stabilises.
So, Lee, obviously, buying a striker has obviously been a huge thing for Everton. So, Beto comes in. Are you happy, mate?
Yeah, I am. Obviously, you hope that he comes in and he does well and it's the ground run. And I think for a striker, an early goal, if you can sort of score on your debut or your second game, I think it really sets the tone for your career, at a club. But there's every reason to be optimistic. He's got a good pedigree. He's a good age. He's very, very physical. He's imposing. Good goals return. I think it roughly 1 in 3 for Udinese over in Italy, which is really positive. And he's coming into an Everton side, which over the next couple of weeks will have more firepower, and will have more creativity on the pitch with the likes of Jack Harrison and who knows else? Who else? Sorry, to come in this week, hopefully. So get him straight in. I think this Dyche fit sort of scenario is grating on a few people. I'm certainly one of them, because you can't be picky after 3 games when you've started the season with 3 losses. You have to be going into that game against Sheffield United fielding your strongest 11. And I'm sorry, but Beto, despite the fact that he won't have had a full week's training, he's coming in new to the league. Is he our best option up front? Yes, he is. It's a huge game of football. We need to get that first win. As I said before, we don't want to be gifting Sheffield United their first 3 points of the season. I'm sick of that happening. Let's face facts, they're a poor side. And whatever 11 Everton put out on Saturday against Sheffield United should be a much stronger 11 on paper than theirs. So we need to be going and looking to win the game. And the only way we're going to do that is by replicating some of the performances we've seen so far, which have been good to a point. But having that striker on the pitch with that bit of quality, with who's able to finish one of these chances, and it just changes everything about the course of a football match. So, no excuses for me. You've got to throw him in against Sheffield United. You just have to.
I'll be honest with you as well. I'm a big obviously anyone that likes the Netflix series is, I watch Power, and he was great as Ghost as well.
He was. He was brilliant. I thought he was outstanding.
I don't know if that makes sense, Tommy Egan, to be honest with you, but every time I see him, I just can't get Ghost out of my mind. But yeah, let look, we've been crying off the centre forward, and good as a need to hero. We do, it's a coliseum, isn't it? And in the last couple of years, a fantastic stadium with so many memories. We don't want to be going out, without a whimper, really. We want someone there to give that crowd something that they deserve, and that's passion, that's joy. So hopefully this fella is a fella who can come in, can command that ground, you know what I mean, and look at some of the great strikers we've had before, and be able to bounce the centre arse around, and be that kind of centre forward that we've really needed. So yeah, I agree. Get him straight in against Sheffield United. Brings other players in, and that's what we've been lacking. Everyone been saying, we've needed someone when Calvert-Lewin's not there, because that's the kind of that. So let's see anyway. So. Transfer window, obviously Friday. Obviously, I think there's still going to be things that happen at Everton. Matt, what are you expecting? Obviously, Beto in, that'll be signing number 5. How many more are you expecting, and where you'd expecting them?
Well, I think we're crying out for a right winger, and I think we need a centre half as well. Yeah, I know we've been linked with the Swiss lad from Mönchengladbach, who by all accounts is a very good centre half, but he can also play right back as well. Alvedi. So I think, centre back is somewhere I think we're quite, even though we've got numbers, I think we're quite weak, because as we know, as the evidence suggests and the stats suggest, that we don't have strength in depth for that. And if we bring Keane back in or Godfrey back in, then I think we're significantly weaker than what we are with Tarkowski and Braithwaite. And a right winger, we're crying out for one. I think I was very excited that we were going to get Nonto, but that seems to have gone by the wayside now.
Do you not think Harrison can play right wing though? Because he has played there
Yeah, I
quite a
do.
bit.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. I do. But it's nice to have strength and depth on the wings and players who can switch positions. You know, I when we signed Harrison, then immediately I thought, well, perhaps Neil's going to go over to the right because he played a lot off the right for Burnley, and Harrison off the left. But you know, with I think Dan Juma is probably going to play predominantly off the left. So you know, we're going to have two left wingers and perhaps you know two right wingers now by the time the window finishes. But you know, I know Sulemana, Bakayoko, you know, and Sinisterra, you know, the players we've talked about and that have been talked about coming. You know, Sinisterra is probably a little bit easier than Nonto now because he's got a release clause. Bakayoko apparently has been linked with PSG today, so you know, you think that would be a non-runner if they're in for him. So, but I'd love Thelwell to surprise us. You know, I'd love him to pull something completely out of the blue. You know, it was Mohamed Kudus last year, and sadly that didn't come off, and you know, he's going to be turning out for West Ham now. But you know, that came out of the blue. None of us saw anything, you know, anything coming with that, and then it was all over the media. He's come in, and then sadly, you know, they bought Anthony, and you know, it all blew up. But yeah, I think it'd be a right wing and a centre back, but I would love to be surprised.
Definitely, mate. I think that's the signings that hit the most are the ones you don't expect, aren't they? And they accelerate almost 24 hours overnight. Lee, listen to Matt says, you know, anyone you're expecting, anything that you think that people may be surprised on in terms of the transfer point of view, what would you like to see come in?
You know me, which I've got to be really careful here because whatever I say, people will start thinking I'm being cryptic or being speaking to the bottom. So I just want to put a disclaimer out there that you know, I have been speaking to the bubble, but not about this sort of stuff in depth. He's very, very busy. What would I like to see? I'd love to see Calvin Phillips. I think we do need a number six. And he sort of sat there at Man City almost wasted. He's doing nothing. So you know, if there was an option to bring him in, I think that would be a really sensible addition. I think he'd fit in well. Another player with a point to prove. After the move that looks on the face of it to have failed, I think he'll be desperate to prove something. So whether or not they'll explore that, I don't know. We desperately do need another centre-half. Like you say, as good as Branthwaite's been, I still think we're one injury away from being weak in that area. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Everton are looking at a centre-back. So don't be surprised if that happens. And yeah, like maybe a surprise one. Who knows? Someone from the Championship. Everton have done that before. You're laughing, Dave. So we've done that before, but we've had you know, good success with that. Certainly back in the Moyes era, you know, players coming in, sort of plucking the best players from the Championship, following that model, and allowing themselves to come in and prove themselves at a Premier League level with Everton. And you know, it's sort of a good level to do that. So you know, maybe something along those lines. And I've just got a sneaking feeling that the Nonto saga, the Free Willy 4, the movie, still a possibility. It still could be getting released this week. I've just got a feeling something may still happen with Willy. I mean, we might get a bit of Willy action this week. Who knows?
honestly. You know, sometimes you're kind of listening, you think, can I add too much more than I can't? I agree with, you know, all the kind of perspectives that you put on that. Sulemana is probably the only other player I'd look at and think, you know, I think that would be a bit of a tasty sign for Everton. Pace, youthful exuberance. And I think our wing positions are actually sorted. I can fully see a world where Harrison plays right, Dan Juma plays left, McNeil almost takes that number 10, the flying wingers, and better in front of him. I'd like to get his left foot closer to goal so we can shoot more often. So yeah, no, I quite like a hybrid player that can play across that front three. Or maybe, you know, someone like Suleiman, a bit of a rough diamonds might be the ticket that they can just come in and just do a little bit across there. But I do agree, centre half is definitely a priority. And I'll be honest, I'd like to see maybe with Michael Keane move off on loan or a transfer there. So got me doubts over over Ben Godfrey, by the way. I think he's got a big 12 months ahead and maybe lucky not to be sold this summer. You want to see some kind of consistency. Again, it's one of them things. Sometimes when you can play two, three, four positions, you get moved across them, and do you actually really nail down a position? No. So maybe you need to decide where his position is, coach him, develop him, and you know, give him a chance to succeed somewhere rather than failing in three or four positions. So just moving on to, we always like to ask fellow Evertonians questions, and they have, as they always do. So Phil Spinner said, if you had to pick four draft lagers at Bramley Moor, what would they be? And I know this is going to straight away be very different because we've got a Welshman on. We've got an IPA enthusiast, and obviously very different to me. So I'm going to start anyway. I'm going to fire Peretti straight off. I'm going to get me Italian on straight off as well, Peroni. I think that we need... He's a modest lager on there as well for everyone. So I wouldn't drink it, of course. And I think that we need something maybe a bit, you know, a bit IPA-ish for the likes of Lee. So I'm going to go with a Brewdog type number as the fourth edition. Talking of our IPA enthusiast, Lee, I'm sure yours are going to be very different than mine. So.
Well,
four draft lagers or four draft beers, sorry, Jack.
Well, you've been really considered there. You've thought of others. Obviously, you can tell you've been brought up well, Dave, you know what I mean? It doesn't go for your four favourites. So, yeah, I think the easy one would be Brewdog, and it is lovely. But I'd go Beavertown Neck Oil. I would go 13 Guns. And that's one for the IPA enthusiasts will know. Then I would go. There was one in the Bridewell at the weekend, which was absolutely ridiculous. It began with a V, and I can't remember what it was called now. Something like Visionary or something like that.
Trying too many to remember.
That was unbelievable. I think Hazy Jane would be another one, and then maybe just something a bit fruity. For you know, your cider enthusiast, your Ben Winstanleys of the world, so like a Copperberg or something like that, just you know, to please them, and that I'm thinking of others.
Gotta keep them happy, mate, haven't you?
Yeah.
Matt, over to you, over to Welsh lands.
Do you know what? I'm not a massive drinker, and when I saw the question, I thought, well. I'd ask Lee to recommend an IPA because I know he's an IPA enthusiast. So I'd ask him, you know, what would he recommend? I thought then, you know, we'd need a nod back to Goodison and just have, you know, Crappy Carlin, just for a bit of nostalgia.
Warm Shang, surely then.
You know, really sort of drink on when we go on holiday, and before we had our little list, then we go to the Caribbean, and they got obviously Red Stripe on tap over there, and that's just a phenomenal drink. That is just absolutely superb. Red Stripe's fantastic. And probably Peroni, I think. And just, yeah, you can tell I'm not a big drinker.
I have missed one out, Guinness, to be fair. I think Guinness would be the only thing I'd probably...
Well, I tried my first pint of Guinness a couple of months ago at a family wedding, and I sent the video. Oh my God, I was almost sick. Oh.
Well, you, as you know, Matt, there's no in-between to drinking with the bottlers, so it's a up your game, especially... As Bramley Moor approaches, so we've had Oggie Toffee say, we are vulnerable on the counter. Is there anyone in the current squad capable of sitting in front of the back four, passing the ball, offloading it, and getting the ball moving? Lee, what do you reckon? And anyone within there, is this something we need to add?
I said, yeah, I think we're crying out for a number six, and we've said it on our WhatsApp group earlier today. You look at the three who are playing in the middle now, and I think they could all probably state a claim that they could do a job there, but they're not experts. It's almost like the jack of all trades, master of none. Onana did a decent job in there under Lampard for a bit, but then you think, are you missing out on his height and his ability on the ball further up the pitch? You don't know. Idrissa Gueye, there's question marks whether he's sort of maybe as is he starting to come down the other side of the hill now in terms of his legs. I don't know. Performances certainly haven't been up to the standard of the Idrissa Gueye that we saw before his move to PSG. And I certainly don't see James Garner as a deep lying number six protecting the back four. That's not where I see him at all. So I agree. I agree. Whoever put the question, and I think it's a very valid one. I think we look awful in the transition. I think, if there's a turnover in play, Everton are really, really vulnerable to these sorts of counter attacks, and we're seeing it often in the first three games. So, if we could identify and bring in a number six, I think that's certainly if we're going to keep playing this formation anyway, I think that's a big area of the pitch we need to improve.
Cheers, Lee. Totally echo what you've said. Banana's an interesting one. Could he actually be better if a manager actually gave him a role and demanded something? He almost seems like he's in between at the moment. Obviously, a fantastic talent. So I constantly ask myself, are we getting the best out, the best out of Amadou Inanna? And whether we are or we're not, it's a question mark. Matt, one for you, Lozenge 1878. If DCL stays fit, do we keep him better and Chimiti happy if we're playing a single striker? Or could you see a role where we're actually playing 4-4-2?
Well, I think that, in terms of the first part of the question, I think Beto is going to be Dyche's man. And I think Calvert-Lewin will probably dovetail or probably get big second half minutes. I think whilst Beto is the main man, I just think we can't rely on him. I think that whilst we spent that type of money on Beto, then he needs to acclimatise himself to the league, like Lee said a little bit earlier. He needs to get in, he needs to be thrown in, he needs to learn what it's like. I don't think we can use him sporadically. I think that Dom is just the unluckiest man in the world. He's got all these muscle injuries over the last 18 months, and then by the time he gets right, he comes back in and he breaks his cheekbone. You just your heart goes out to him, but you just can't rely on him now, and we've brought somebody in who hopefully that we can. I think Dyche could morph into a 4-4-2, but the construct of the midfield then is going to be what you do with that, and it goes back to the question a little bit earlier, or the thing we're talking about a little bit earlier is what you do with Onana, what you do with James Garner, how does the Corey fit into a two-man midfield? Because when we're playing 4-2-3-1 under Ancelotti, it wasn't really working. We had to go to 4-3-3 to get the best out of him. It's a toughie. I think Chimiti probably knows his place in the squad at the moment. And Dyche alluded to the other day, he's a development striker. So, I think there's minutes for him in cup games if we manage to stay in the competitions, and last sort of 10, 15 minutes if we're trying to chase a game or we're trying to get back into a game, then I think he'll cut his teeth that way. I just really hated Dyche's 4-4-2 at Burnley, and I wouldn't want to see it at Everton, to be honest with you. I think we're more suited to 4-3-3 or 4-1-1-1.
It's an interesting question, actually, and you kind of alluded on something. I was kind of thinking in the back of my head, Lee, Doucouré, obviously, he obviously served a purpose. Ancelotti brought him in massive wages. you know, similar to Alan, you know, some of them players have been moved on since. Obviously, he's probably why we stayed up at the end of the season. But now we look on now where we are, what we're looking to do and where we're looking to be. You know, if we get players fit again. You know, if we'll talk about the Saudi window being open for an extra 14 days. I certainly know there's interest from Marco Silva at Fulham. Would you be tempted? You know, this is one of these players who could there be a last minute bit of interest in Doucouré? And is this a player that you might all of a sudden be tempted to move on and that might help us do business elsewhere?
Personally, I think we've talked about this issue, this thing a couple of times whilst we've been on the podcast, and that's Evan's bench. He's the type of player that I think we need to see move from the starting 11 onto the bench. And he strengthens that, because for too long, the drop-off in quality between whoever's starting for Everton and any options coming off the bench has just been huge. And you almost know, you know, you can't make changes, or if you do, it's almost sort of waving a white flag and conceding defeat in a game, because they're not going to influence anything. So for Doucouré, I think he has served a purpose. I think he resurrected himself really, really well last year after a nightmare under Lampard. Really was one of the key figures in the last sort of dozen games, which helped keep us up in the end. But he is inconsistent. And if we are looking to push on and get away from this sort of bottom six area, I think he's the type of player that you need to phase out of your starting 11 and maybe have on the bench. And he's a figure that can come on for 20 minutes and be a real nuisance. That's how I see it.
Do you think he'll sit on the bench, though? That's one of the, you know, that's a big question, isn't it? Obviously, we see him in the thing with Lampard.
Yeah, you never know. And as I say, with some of the money that's on offer, and if it, you know, there's not been any talk of it, but if he does get it, and this goes for any player, you know, if there's an offer from Saudi comes in, it's very, very difficult to turn that down in favour of sitting on Everton's bench. So, you know, there's a lot of factors to take into account. But let's say no offer did come in, I still think he's someone that we need to start looking to phase towards the bench. But I still think he'd be a very useful and valuable squad player.
Fair enough, Lee. Cheers. And I believe, right, from the golf point of view, you've now got a golf podcast on the go as well, haven't you?
Well, not quite on the go yet, mate. No, it's sort of in its launch phase. So it's something I've wanted to do for a while. As you know, golf's not everyone's cup of tea, I understand that. But for me, it's my sport. I've always loved it since I was like 15. You know, if I'm not playing golf, I'm thinking about it or talking about it. I bore people with it, you know, a lot. So I just thought, right, instead of boring people, I'll just target people who actually like golf and would want to listen to it. So, yeah, I've managed over the last 12 months, again, just through Twitter and the Everton profile there, to build up some really good golf connections, some great Evertonians who are well positioned within the sport. And I think with golf, it is like who you know, and contacts can be really, really useful. So a few people have just suggested it to me, you know, why don't you do a golf podcast? You think it'd be really good. So I thought, you know what, why not? I'll give it a go. And as same with the Bullens View stuff, you know, started off as a bit of fun, you know, and I'm not thinking too far ahead. It is just a bit of fun and talking about another topic that I enjoy. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Win, lose, fade or draw. A name that I thought of in the Centurion bar in St. Andrews, absolutely blathered about 12 pints of Guinness in. And I'm dead proud of it.
So how can people root it out, like, just in case there are, you know, is it just Twitter-based or...?
Yeah, it's Twitter and Instagram. It's just at win, lose, fade, draw. So win, lose, fade, draw on Twitter and Instagram. And then obviously eventually when the content does start to drop, which is hopefully going to be in September at some point, you know, you'll get it on all your usual platforms, so like, you know, Apple, Spotify, everything. You know the drill.
Definitely, I'm sure.
Thanks for the plug, mate. Anyway, I'll drop you that fiver. I'll transfer it to you after this is finished.
And a pint of Guinness for me, as always. But I just want to wish a happy birthday to Rob Fisher as well. Rob the Fish, top of
all the best, Rob. Yeah,
happy birthday, Rob.
So he, I thought he was sending a question, but he was, I think he was just sending some abuse, to be fair, on it's a bit of question thing, but I wouldn't expect anything less from Rob. Thank you for listening, for everyone. As always, it's been good to be back, and I'm sure we'll catch you soon.
Hey Mick, what happened to the watches on my table?
Four watches with nothing to do with it.
You make me think!
They said, so